welcome to the next episode of the Beach Court Podcast. We have a special guest host joining us this week. Little Dark Fury has come back again. He can never stop yapping with us. So thank you, Little Dark Fury, for joining while Parker is still traveling back from Milwaukee via car. The ancient technology before planes were existed. But, we'll have him back next week. So, LDF, thanks for joining in. Maddox is back on the ground. He's back from Milwaukee. And we'll run through all the Milwaukee results. We'll give a full recap of what Maddox and LDF played this weekend, what their thoughts on the deck was, and how it goes forward. For those that don't know, they played Pango. This is now the Pango Pod, not the Beach Court Podcast.
Pango Pod.
So we'll talk all about Pango. We also have none other than the winner of the Milwaukee Regional Championships, Christian Labella, joined us for an interview. So we'll air that interview for you. And you can hear all about Raging Bolt and why he chose to play it, because kind of people were shocked at, like, Raging Bolt won a tournament. And then, of course, we'll wrap it up with Crispin's Corner. We're going to find out who was cooking in Milwaukee. We're excited to see some cool decks. But, gentlemen, like, how was your weekend? How was your travel? What was the weather like? What was the food like? I'm jealous. I was at home. I need to hear everything.
Hey, miss, I'll have you there in Milwaukee, man. I mean, it was a good time. I know, I barely ran into the venue. I know where I always ran into is the Third Street Market Hall. I think that's probably the only spot I ate a meal besides the convention center. But it's like,
Same, right down
the street, you're able to go get plenty of drinks and like so many food options. Plus, just like everyone's there hanging out. Like the whole tournament was there anyway. So, like, I was going to go hang out. So, I had a pretty good time. Matt, what did you get up to?
Basically the same thing. I was like at the Third Street Market the whole time. It was like the spot. It was actually, I don't think we've had a regional like this in a while where like, there's like one specific spot near the venue that everyone went to, because it feels like sometimes there's no places like that. Everyone's like all split up after the tournament. But, you know, after day one, like literally like every Pokemon player was just at this place and it was pretty cool. There's a lot of food options there. I think every day I was there, I had ice cream. So that was really cool. And I like the food. I like the barbecue they had there. They had like a barbecue place and then they had some hot dog places that I had. Had a burger. They had like rice bowls and stuff. Some pretty good food options. So that was nice. I think that was like kind of the highlight of Milwaukee. Like the experience was just being there, to be honest. It was just really cool that it was like this big hangout spot that everybody was at. I thought that was kind of sick.
All right, with the cheese curds. You boys get some cheese curds?
Nope.
I regrettably, as much as I talk about making sure the cheese curds squeak, I don't know if they had any at Thursday Market. Maybe I missed it. Maybe there are too many options, but I didn't get it.
Maybe.
You guys didn't get cheese curds in Milwaukee, Wisconsin?
I know.
We literally played cheese, too. How did we not do that?
You guys played the cheese.
We're cheesed out. By the end, we were just lactose intolerant or something.
Yeah.
I remember, like, it was the same venue as 2 years ago in Milwaukee. And which is funny because, like, the tournament's, like, the game's been growing so much, but this tournament was, like, the same size as it was 2 years ago.
I thought it was nine rounds. I was surprised. I didn't know it was eight rounds until the day of. Like, I think after the first round, I found out it was eight rounds.
You're like one round to eight to go to 5-2-1, and it's like, oh, hey, you're in day two. Like, wait, what? I thought another round. Mm-hmm. No, what was it? Actually, no, you're 5-1-1. You had it. You hit Gabe Smart at the end, but you can talk about that.
But
I just remember, like, last, like, 2 years ago, there was a lunch break in the middle of Milwaukee. And like everyone went to Third Street Market Hall and they had like Pokemon deals. It was like, oh, you show off your wristband or your lantern and you get like $2 off. So I remember it was just like everyone was there. So
yep.
I got to say this time. That? So I was there, right?
For that. Yeah,
I was there. Yeah.
It was a good spot.
The lunch break. I don't remember that.
I remember it. It's funny. I started last time in Milwaukee 3-0-1. And then after the lunch break, I literally just lost three in a row.
Dang.
But the lunch break curse is real, man. I hate lunch breaks. I think. Just don't bring them back, Pokemon. Don't bring them back. They ruined the momentum, I swear.
Yeah, I was 3-1 and then lost the next two.
Yep.
You know, that brings up an interesting point, LDF, because, you know, they're trying to go to, like, the asynchronous matches at some point, probably, you know, like Japan does. What kind of take would you do for that kind of, if we had asynchronous matches, what would you do? You just said you don't want a lunch break. Would you just, like, play, pair, play, like, just, like, grind nine in a row? Like, how would you approach that situation? Because I know you haven't been on here talking about that.
I mean, I think the idea is kind of cool. It's nice when it flows really well. Like, Milwaukee ended really quickly. Day one ended at, like, not even, like, 7 or something. It was crazy. It ended so early. It was run very smooth. I mean, the idea is cool. I probably would try to grind out 9 rounds if I can, obviously. Or, like, if I'm on a deck with a bunch of my buddies, you know, after every round, we kind of, like, sit down and talk about the list a little bit more in the run, and then we just you know, queue up another match. So I think that would be really cool. I wouldn't mind that either. Because yeah, Milwaukee was run really smoothly. It ended really early on day one. Day two ended like all rounds were done by like 2 p.m., which is really cool. So yeah, it was a great run. It was run really well. Smooth tournament. That idea would be nice. Wouldn't hate it either. But it was nice having no lunch break, anything like that. Yeah. We haven't had a lunch break in a long time, but
yeah, we haven't. I think it's great.
Yeah, they just need to stop bringing that back. Like I get the idea, but like usually you're gonna have one game out of like your first like five or six rounds where you should have enough time to get food anyways. It's gonna happen where you
like,
have a
even
game
when you're playing Snorlax, like someone's just gonna auto scoop to you, like whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyways, before we jump into the full Milwaukee recap and the deck you guys played. We had a really big announcement this week, and you know we have to mention it. We got our world set was announced, and when I say set, what I meant to say was our sets. We got two sets announced for Worlds: Black Bolt and White Flare. Kind of throwing it back to the black and white days. This is the first time the Pokemon Company International has ever done two sets at once, and they're both releasing on July 18th. I need some instant reactions. What are you guys thinking about these two sets?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I got into the game like in the late Diamond and Pearl era, but I do vividly remember the Black and White era vividly. Like it was like probably pre-EXs. It was like really good. And then obviously like Mewtwo came out and stuff. It changed a bit, but Black and White era is, I'm really, really nostalgic for it. Also part of like the legacy format on PCGO. But I'm excited. I've already seen that they reprinted some old cards from that era, which is really cool. And I was actually talking to Jake Gearhart this past weekend about other cards that could be reprinting from the Black and White era. So I'm really excited to see what else they bring back. What we've seen already, it's like Emboar, Electric, there's a Victini, Prism Energy got reprinted, Air Balloon got reprinted. I think that's because they don't want to bring back Floatstone, which also came out during that era. That's probably their way of not bringing that back. But I'm excited to see what else gets reprinted.
I'm so happy Floatstone didn't get reprinted. That card would be broken.
That card's broken, yeah. It's a little too good. Yeah. Air Balloon's a good middle ground for sure.
100%. Yeah. And pretty good for, like, the Goldengos of the world and Zoroarks, you know, like the two, you know, retreat cost folks. So quick way to move them under item lock.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm excited for it. You know, I'm, like, the Pokemon Black and White games, like, video games are probably one of my favorite just because I've been playing for so long and being able to, like, enter to a new region and have, like, full new 151 for the, like, for the first time again was just, like, such a cool experience. So I'm very nostalgic for that area. I got a couple of good favorites from there. And I'm excited that there's, you know, so many. I mean, I'm excited, but also not excited. There's so many like cool collector cards from there because it's like, oh, they're doing more Pokeball, Master Ball, and illustration rares for everything.
156 rare, like IRs, SIRs.
Yeah, crazy. Which like, as a person who likes pretty Pokemon cards, it's really cool. As a person who like might try to acquire those pretty Pokemon cards, it's very hard if everyone else is also trying to get them. So yeah,
and that's coming off of Destined Rivals too.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's I mean, the special sets are always harder to get too because like there's no booster boxes, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, only ETBs.
Yeah, there's a little part of me who's nervous about just like, okay, can I find all the cards I need like before Worlds? And like
that
to
is
test
fair.
Them, like to be able to know about them and like, and also that's a lot of cards to put out before Worlds too.
I mean, just
like,
think about last year where like how Shroud of Fable was like, I gotta find my Fez, gotta get my Fez, right?
Yeah, but even like, then Fez was like, I mean, there's like 80, 70 cards in the set. Like there wasn't that much. It was like, okay, Night Stretcher, Fez, Dusknoir, Kyurem, like we're the ones to watch out for. But like, if they're dropping 156 just Pokemon, now I'm gonna add trainers. I'm like, what? Like, what new combinations could be there? Might be time for Maridon to come back though with Dynamotor Electric.
Yes, sir.
Yep, that definitely looks pretty good.
Back, maybe. But yeah, so I'm excited to see what happens with that set for Worlds. Did you guys see Pokemon's post like in UK where they like highlighted the N in the word? You know, I don't know the exact phrase they said, but they kind of referenced that maybe N is coming back.
That'd be wild. N and Ionne in the same format.
That'd
be nuts.
Could you imagine
that?
Never say never. Crazy.
Maybe they'll bring back N's Resolve or something.
Like, hey, everybody brought back N's Resolve. I mean, I think, like, I don't know. I think it is a fine. We don't need them both to exist right now.
That would be a little egregious.
If they're going to replace, if they're going to put N back, like, you know, maybe it's like as soon as G block rotates.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, like, the way that things are going, where like Research, Boss, and Ionne and Arbonne are like all going to rotate. There's like no viable replacements for those yet. I think that could like be a really good format.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if we get Boss in that set. Like an I-block Boss.
Now we got Lycia's Appeal. Don't worry about it.
We got Lycia and Prime Catcher, and then we got Giovanni Boss for Team Rocket.
Yeah.
They want Team Rocket to be good, man. So there you
go. They do, yeah, they do. Anyways, that's enough for you to talk about Black and White. We'll get to that as that set comes. Everyone's here to hear about your guys' run. in Milwaukee. I think both of you finished top 128. LDF, did you finish top 128, right? Yeah.
I got 158th.
158th. Okay, so you both made day two with Pango, Holt, Dango. Each of your lists are a little bit different. So, Maddox, why don't you kick us off? What made you decide to play this deck to Milwaukee and, you know, the specific list you chose?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I've been a big Goldango fan for a while. Kind of always wanted it to be good. I think now is probably some of the best like Goldango has ever been, like since EOIC. At least, right, with, you know, Xander Brogue, who we had interviewed on the pod as well with his Goldango run. So I've kind of been enjoying the deck as a side, like as kind of a side enjoyment since then. You know, had a good February for me, played Raging Bull to Atlanta and wasn't quite so happy with it. Maybe I should suck a little bit more, but you can hear more from Christian LaBella in a little bit. But again, you know, Goldango is a deck that I've wanted to enjoy or that I've been enjoying and wanted to play. And right after Atlanta, I saw a cool list from Tord through Tord's Kitchen about the Goldango Dragapult. And the idea was really leaning into the heavy draw power of Recon Directive and playing like a full 4-4-2 Dragapult line. Plus, you know, more of the energies to attack them, like really leaning into the power of Dragapult as an attacker a little bit more than other builds per. So locked in with Goldango pull a little bit early. You know, Caleb and Grant Shen did very well within the modern race. So I was a little bit nervous about people being a little more ready for it. But, you know, at that point, you know, stuck to the process and stuck with it. Again, my list is a little bit different than what their group had been playing or, you know, closer to what LDF has played. My list featured, again, that 4-4-2 cloak line and the two Dragapults, no Cyphers.
Yeah, Iono, you didn't. Yeah.
Yeah, three Iono, I'm just like a lot of ways to just like constantly disrupt. So, I know that I like, you know, was highlighting this high on this list a lot. And, you know, I think reactions I got from LDF as well as many others were like, oh, that's interesting. but LDF, I didn't quite believe that philosophy. You actually went a little more hybrid, maybe a little greedy, but a little bit of some good spice to win some matchups. So tell us about your Pango variant.
Yeah, so I was playing like the Grand Shen Pango build with the Genesect and the Ventral Punch, and I also kept like a very thin Dragapult line, 2-2-1 Dragapult. I wasn't even going to play Pango before the tournament. Like, I was very much thinking about just Archaladon Zork. That's what me and my friend Sashi were going to play. But honestly, like the night before, I was not feeling that Zork deck at all. It relies a little bit heavily on Precious Trolley, and you get Budded, and you prize it, or just, I don't know, like, it just felt like the deck wasn't consistent enough to work. It didn't seem like a bad deck for this meta. Honestly, I'm kind of glad I didn't play it, or maybe I would have played it after all, because, like, I had a lot of Terra Box and stuff. I had one Dragapult throughout the entire tournament, so it was kind of a crazy run for me. But, like, literally before I went to bed, like, I'm like, I gotta decide what I gotta play tomorrow, man, and I just, like, locked in Pult Dango. I just was like, I'm just going to keep the Genesect in for the mirror. No Baby Dango. I think Baby Dango is kind of bad, to be honest. And I like the Dragapult a lot. I was originally going to play an Iron Bundle in the deck, but I just cut it. Couldn't find room for it. I got a little greedy with my build. I did cut a Ultra Ball and TM Evo. So I squeezed in a second Earthen Vessel and a Jamming Tower, and I put a 12th energy in the deck. I just can't play Goldango with 11 energy, man. It just doesn't feel right. I think a 12 energy just feels so good right now, especially versus Genesect. And then having the Genesect and the double vessel means that if I'm playing against a deck with Genesect, which I expected to randomly hit people with random Genesects in their deck, and I was fairly right this weekend. I hit like 3 or 4 decks this weekend that had a Genesect in it. So having the ability to just have double vessel and my own Genesect means I can't get stamped out of the game. And then I have two vessels. I own it a 5. Surely will be enough resources with two vessels to get, you know, the energy needed to take a knockout. And then from there, your deck kind of just flows with the superior energy retrievals. The 60 felt good. There were a few moments where I wish I had the second Ultra Ball or TM Evo, obviously, but it was like fine. The deck did what it was supposed to do. Dragapult was a good attacker. I used it a few times against Mirror, used it against Joltik Box this weekend, and Terra Box came up a couple times there. It was a pretty good card overall. Didn't always use Dragapult, like Goldango usually carries, but the option to just randomly attach to a Dracloak and then later on in the game have the threat of a Dragapult is pretty sick. So I like the 60. I think if I was going to Portland, I'd play it again, and I probably would consider the second team Evo, but yeah, felt good. I liked the list a lot, and yeah, I'm glad I made day two with it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I mean, like, I'm glad you're attacking Dragapult too. I mean, the biggest thing that like I heard questions about was like, okay, well, how much are you actually attacking Dragapult? You have so much committed to it. I mean, honestly, I was thinking back, like, of like my 12, like, game sets that I played, like I probably used it in like 8 or 9 of the sets. I mean, like, there's just so many times where it was even like, I guess a Raging Bolt. I'm like, okay, I'm down bad. I'm like, all right, you know, Vault of Dragapult, I order 1, you know, counter catcher smack, boss smack, and like, and then win the next turn, right? I mean, like, just some like really good scenarios there. Yeah, tech cutting the second Evo would be like a tough move for me. But also, yeah. I mean, you need the Vengeful Punch because you're playing the Genesect. But also, I think my build like maybe requires the Evo more because there are so many times that I would go like Evo into two Dracloaks. And then I would like next turn, I would just go like Evo into two more Dracloaks. So, like, when you set up ridiculous boards like that, it was like, hey, this works.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how does your deck feel in the mirror? Because you don't have the baby Dango, but I guess, like, the mirror for you is, like, you can set up a Dragon Headbutt, take the first prize, or...
Yeah, I mean, so... Phantom Dive? I hadn't hit any mirrors, like, all throughout day one, and I hit three of my four rounds in day two were mirrors, so...
Oh, my gosh.
So it was actually funny, like, the, you know, so I entered a 5-2 once, and, like, my round nine opponent didn't really know the mirror, so they, like, went in Gold Dango attack, and I'm like, all right, E-Search Pro, just, like, go pop off, and then... But the whole time I'd been like kind of prepping on my side, like, you know, power up, just like prepare for a Dragon Headbutt. So he like adjusted to that and then like copied my strategy in the second game and like started doing that. I think eventually kind of had a spot where like he didn't have enough draw or like had to put a Gold Dango into play. I was able to get ahead from there. So, but I think my deck, the benefit is I can a little more reliably like start a Jareepi and like get the Dragon Headbutt because I'm playing like more outs to those energies. Definitely have a hard time in the like mirror if they play Genesect. My round 10 opponent actually played the Genesect, but I did not see it all game until like halfway through the second game where I was like, he's superior. I was like, wait, you're playing Genesect? Because like there are so many times like if he had like, I mean, he pulled off a turn where he went like, I auto meet a four, and then he got E-Search Pro off of his own Iono and then was able to blow me up there. I'm like, if he had like Genesect with that too, like I'd totally lose that set. And then I also played against Caleb Rogerson for the win and in the cash round 12. He got me there, but I mean, I felt like my deck in theory is a little better, like prepared into it, because I can set up like a better single prize draw. But, yeah. but I think it's really just like I can more consistently get to the Dragon Headbutt. But at the same time, like it didn't work all the time, right? After the first two games, I was like, oh, this works perfectly, and then I lost to Caleb, and I was like, eh, maybe it's not that robust. So he could protect his deck a little more with like Cypher. So like my own plays at the end of the game, he's just like, yeah, I just Cypher stack, you know, superior Cypher, and I'm like, ah, I can't really do anything about that.
Yep, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, Pango's in a decent spot in the meta right now. You know, it's nice having additional draw on board that is single prize draw, especially for those late game Ionas. You know, I'm looking, you know, Matthew, over your kind of run. You know, you went, you know, 5-1, 5-2-1, but you were 5-1-1 going into round eight when you hit Gabe Smart on, you know, the hands box. Right. Seems like somewhat of a favorable matchup for Goldango.
It's 50. Yeah, 50-50. Even with the Vengeful Punch, we've made it to game three.
The Pikachu. Yeah, the Pikachu is the problem.
Yeah, we made it to game three, and he Iono me to two, and his active was Blood Moon or Saluna, and I had double Dango Fez Dracloak on board, and I drew Arvin Artisan, and then I top decked Ultra Ball. So I like shuffled my deck. Because he did Iono a lot of cards at the bottom, but I drew all those cards and I just didn't pull off the knockout to win, which was pretty annoying. I was like kind of mad about that. I was like, really? I drew that many cards? I whiffed? Come on. I had extra outs. If I drew like an energy or a vessel, if I had two energy in the deck too, I could have probably won. I maybe could have played my last turn a bit differently going into that. But yeah, I was like, there's no way I whiffed this, right? I'm doing so much. I can shuffle the deck here. I have an Arvin already in hand that I drew off of Fez, so I had like pretty good odds. And it turns out the next card was gonna be the Cypher Maniac. So, unfortunate loss there. Nothing I could do.
Yeah, we see because it's correct, not because it always works, right? That's just kind of like sometimes you get it, sometimes like you do everything right, and it's like, all right, I did a low percentage miss, and that happens.
Yeah.
I also saw you pair against our boy Andrew Reinhardt round two.
Mm-hmm.
Charizard Pidgeot. I mean, what were you thinking when you hit a Charizard deck? You're like, what the heck, bro? What's going on here?
I was like kind of scared. I was like scared, but I was like, I mean, this matchup's not that bad anymore. He didn't play the Dusknoir, but he also there's no Radzard though. So like I was like, this matchup's probably fine. I think if I take first two prizes, I probably just win. He played pretty well game one. I was trying to bait him into attacking Goldango so that I can Monkey Dory his Cleffa or Buddy we had on board. So I was trying to get two prize KO that way because I wanted to play around the potential Shiyu play if I whiffed Gust. He won game one because he had Briar, and I didn't expect there was a Briar in the deck, or I just didn't think of it. And then game two, I squeaked out a win, and then we just tied. I would say that's an unfavorable matchup the more I thought about it. I mean, he had Budu and Shiyu, which is like kind of annoying to deal with because I had to like preemptively play around the Budu he had, and I had to play around Shiyu. Like, it was not easy. And like in game one, I was trying to build up my Dragapult, and every time I would attach a Dracloak, Bro just had the boss. He didn't even, I think he took a couple turns to get a Pidgeot out. He just had the Gust every time. I'm like, bros, what? He had boss in hand, and the following turn, he established Pidgeot, and then Gust in my other Dracloak. I'm like, bro, you gotta let me get a Dragapult done, man. It was fine. I had a scary matchup. I think the matchup's worse. They have Dusknoir. They can offset the prize trade really easily if you play slow, and then they can like set up a play with like, they can one-shot your Dengo with Dusclops, because you go 210, and then 50, the next 260. They could like take out multiple gimmies with the Dusknoirs. So I'm glad he wasn't playing ghosts. It made it a bit easier to manage, but it was still kind of tough because he had like Shiyu and Budu, which like kind of a little annoying.
Yeah. That's your guys' runs, but let's review the rest of Milwaukee. I'm gonna start sharing my screen for those of you that are listening on Spotify and Google and Apple. Thank you so much. But come on over to YouTube. I'm sharing my screen. I run through the limitless results. So looking at the day one meta, Dragapult EX did come in as the most popular deck again at 16.3%. And Gardevoir shot all the way up to second at 12.5%. We did talk about that. Maddox, you want to run through our predictions of what we had cooking last episode?
Yeah, I mean, I know the main thing we were talking about is, you know, could Gardevoir shoot ahead of Dragapult? And the answer was no. It was second on the graph here. I do think what's also like worth noting is, you know, they did separate out the two Goldengo variants. So Goldengo and the Goldengo straight, Goldengo and Goldengo to Dunsparce is 8.7. Goldengo Dragapult was 6.3. So put those together, I mean, 15% of players played a Goldengo variant, which I think like that's pretty relevant. And I mean, honestly, like that's a lot of Goldengo. So
honestly, going into this tournament, I knew Goldengo was going to be the second most played deck. I didn't think it would be 15%, but I thought it was going to be like 11% of players on Goldengo. I thought Dragapult was going to break 20%+. I was surprised to only see 16, but I'm not surprised to see Goldengo be the second most played deck for sure. I saw that coming.
19 that combined, so.
I guess if you count the other Dragapult, like Goldengo decks also as Dragapult, that's like 22-23% of players on it, I guess.
I think this just doesn't include Dusknoir, right?
No, I think that Dragapult list probably just has like Dragapult plus, I mean, maybe like Charizard probably.
Yeah, a few other percentage points
of like other Dragapult variants that didn't make up the piece there.
And but that, almost 15% Goldengo if you combine the twos. It's a lot.
Yeah. I knew cheese was going to be popular. Because like going to the tournament, I was like, I don't want to lose
Milwaukee,
the mirror.
You got to play cheese.
Yeah, exactly. I knew people were just going to play because it's like, Goldengo's fun to play. Like, a lot of people just don't like stressing out about Gardevoir and Dragapult. But Goldengo is like super straightforward. Like it is, there's a lot of skill involved. Like I think a really good Goldengo player really does separate themselves from a bad Goldengo player or a mediocre one. But it is like a very like easy deck to make day two with, in my opinion.
Yeah, speaking of easy deck right now, the next deck on the list, 11.5% is the Joltik Marinon deck. Getting a lot of hate that it's like just an easy deck. And, you know, some notable players, aka Jake here, are saying like, it's just like too easy, and that Marinon, you know, Iron Hand specifically, you know, needs to be banned or something. What are your guys' thoughts on this Joltik deck running around, and you know, what do you feel about it in the meta right now?
Yeah, I think the first thing with this deck is, you know, yes, it has a linear game plan. It says I'm going to take two prizes with my attacker of choice, Pikachu EX or Iron Hands EX. But also like right now, I mean, especially like for this past weekend, like you cannot deny the win rate, right? People can say anything they want about this deck, but at the end of the game, like, this deck just wins games, and it wins games a lot more than other decks do, right? I mean, when considering like tie rates, this deck's still ending up at over 50% win rate. You know, good into Gardevoir and Dragapult, and other decks have a hard time answering it. Again, like maybe people don't like it or don't want to play it, but at the end of the day, if a deck gets wins and people can and it's accessible and people can play it and win with it, then why would you not play it and win with it?
You know, it's funny to say that. I want to pull up a certain someone's run. Where is he? Hold on, let me find him. Poor Henry Chow had to run the gauntlet on day two. Pikachu.
Oh, no. And then lost to our boy LDF.
And then
at the
lost
end.
LDF at That's... the end. So poor Henry Chow. Jeez. I know he's probably feeling it just like, you know, Jake Gearhart might be right now. But yeah, Raging Bolt all the way down here in fifth place, but did end up taking the win, you know, with Raging Bolt. And looking at our day two conversion rates, Dragapult converted positively. Joltik jumped up big time to 16.3%. Gardevoir was positive. Goldengo dropped a little bit under each category. And then Raging Bull kind of held its own, just dropping 0.3%, and eventually taking down the win. But, you know, what stood out to you guys for this meta, and where do you think the meta's going, you know, going forward?
I mean, I think we're probably going to see Raging Bull spike for Portland. I wouldn't be surprised if it went from, like, 7% to, like, 10%+ going into Portland. It has a really good matchup against Dragapult. Like, maybe, honestly, out of every deck except for Goldango, it probably has the best Dragapult matchup because you can spam the Baby Bolt. You can use Pheasant Dippity too. So you can just aggressively snipe their Dracloaks. They never get a Dragapult out. And then, even if they do, you just blow them with Raging Bolt. The Guardian matchup isn't bad either from what I've been told and what I saw. Christian did 2-0 Tonneson in top eight. So the deck, like, it's not bad in a Guardi. Like, it's not as bad as it used to be in a Gardevoir. Like, before, Raging Bolt had an abysmal Guardi matchup, but now the matchup is, like, even easier in this meta. And then it has a really good matchup against Goldango and Maridon too. The Joltik box deck struggles against Raging Bolt because they have Slitherwing, so you can't really use Pikachu very well. And the Goldango matchup is easy because you no longer have to take a prize with, like, Raging Bolt. You can just Fan Rotom, KO Gimmighoul, and they have usually no way to take two prizes, and then you should easily just chain the 2-2-2 prize race from there. So the deck is really powerful. Or even, like, you could just go, like, Fan Rotom, Judge Knockout, kill the Goldango and be like, all right, you have to sack Goldango, Cypher, E-Search, Pro, Countercatcher, good luck. Yeah, the Raging Bolt deck, I think, is very powerful, most likely going to be a top three deck going forward. I don't know if it's better than Goldango overall. Goldango does have an easier time into Guardian Dragapult. Raging Bolt is a bit more, like, non-linear, or, like, there's more lines you have to take with, like, Noctowl and stuff, but I think Raging Bolt is now, like, a top five deck in the format. If it wasn't before, it definitely is now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact, you know, like, Raging Bolt is just that good right now. The maybe, like, the way the meta is set up so slow, Raging Bolt being able to, like, just really, really capitalize on, oh, you know, you're playing Dragon Ball and you're gonna sit back behind your cloaks, and I'm just gonna go and, like, sign your cloaks or your Curlias over and over. One thing I did actually notice in the conversion, my first time seeing the day two conversion numbers, since it had the drag, like, the Goldango variant separated out, Goldango Dragapult was the one that actually converted positively, while the generic Goldango did not convert as positively. So
yeah, I'm not surprised about that. I mean, I like the Dango Dunsparce deck is cool. I tried a little bit of it going in the tournament, because I'm like, maybe I'll play, like, Goldango to Dunsparce, so, like, a Scizor, because Scizor's kind of cute against Mirror, and it's good against Terrabox and Pikachu, but I was like, eh, Dunsparce feels really mid. Like, it's just, you have to constantly recycle it into play, which is, like, annoying. Sometimes it messes up your game plan, and if you get Iono'd and you don't have a Dunsparce down, your deck kind of sucks. The Dunsparce feels, like, okay, but I think Dragapult overall is stronger, because I'd rather have a Recon Directive than a Runaway Draw, if that makes any sense.
Exactly. It's like that late game draw that remains on board. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I found too. I think, like, all the, you know, I think a lot of the, you know, a lot, like, the people who were playing Goldango, you know, that were doing well with it, we're all playing the Dragapult variant for the most part.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really strange that a Recon Directive is better than a Goldango on the bench. You know, it's like you're seeing two cards instead of one.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you might want both, but I think most of the time you're just looking for that one superior. So, you know, I could see it being a little bit better. Looking at the rest of the results here on Limitless, we got some cool decks in day two. We got a Gouging Fire, an Oogie Doogie, Slaking. We got some Roaring Moon to Dunsparce pop up.
Oh, well, Aiden Koos, 17th place with the Roaring Moon to Dunsparce. His list isn't actually even here because it's not flagged as other, because he only played one Roaring Moon. But he played, like, the neutralization zone, so he's down there in the other category. Yeah, yeah. Or if you just check 17th on the main standings, but it was funny. I was playing. I got a chance to play against Aiden Kusum on Friday. You know, he was just looking for some folks to get full.
This is Ancient Box.
Oh no, it's Roaring Moon to Dunsparce.
No, this is Ancient Box.
No, it's Roaring Moon to Dunsparce. It's the same deck.
It's not Explorer's Guidance. It's Ancient Box.
But sort of the other Moon deck. What do you mean?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is Ancient Box, but not really. It doesn't have, like, four Flutter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can play, like, an Ancient Box deck. I don't know. I don't know. It's, like, kind of, like, a mix of the two. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Basically, my point is I was playing against him on Friday.
Yeah.
He was kind of cooking me with it. I was playing the Grand Shen, Caleb Rogers, and Goldango. I wasn't doing very well. I did manage to get a game off him with Conkeldurr, so I was pretty proud of that.
Nice.
I was playing Conkeldurr into his, Roaring Moon pile. But, again, he believed in the deck when no one else did. Unfortunately, bubbled out of top 16, but
I think the deck is really good. I think honestly, that was a deck like going to the tournament. I was thinking a little bit about if I put more time into it, I maybe would have considered it. The two decks I've kind of wanted to play that I thought was like, if I put more time in these decks and learn them before the tournament, I would have considered them. The Moon Dunsparce deck was one of them. And the other one I think was Flareon. But yeah, I think Moon Dunsparce, it's not a bad deck. Like, I think it was good.
I don't think Flareon just has that good of a Gardevoir matchup. I played the deck, and like, as soon as a Gardevoir hits the field, like, you just lose, man. Like, there's nothing you can do to beat.
I mean, yeah, you have Sylveon. You just set up two Sylveon.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
you gotta hope to, like, yeah, you gotta set up two Sylveon, and you gotta hope, like, once they attack, like, that turn.
It's not
just,
great.
Like, you have,
but...
like, boss, you know, or Catacatcher Iono Sylveon.
Yeah.
So great.
I don't know. I think you can win games off of Angel Light Cope. But yeah, I get your point. Like, Flareon's, like, it's cool. It actually has a good matchup spread apart from, like, maybe a shaky Guardian matchup.
I mean,
I think
it's
actually...
just great to, like, auto Goldengo if it's going to be 15%, right? I
yeah,
mean,
it beats Goldengo. Yeah.
Autos Goldengo.
Yeah, and it. I think if you know what you're doing, you should also be able to beat Dragapult pretty easily.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played against a Flareon on my run to go to 5-0, and I won, but like had to play absolutely out of my mind for it.
Yeah, it's a
eventually
tough
like I mean it was like so scuffed. I literally was just like, all right, I don't know, late like shove a Dragapult and just like you know somehow manage. So, but
yeah,
like, it's so bad. They can just prior.
Yeah,
and
you got three
prior, Iona,
so
prior.
That's you definitely
exactly
have a better time.
Yeah,
you have you have a way better advantage. All my games against the Terra decks this weekend were like it did come down to me playing an Iono. But having one Iono felt bad. I definitely felt the loss of not having two Iono. So I think if I wanted to beat Terra Box and Guardian more and Flareon more consistently, I would have probably wanted to run your build, Maddox, over my build. Because the one Iono felt kind of jank. I'd have the constantly ciphered into my hand, or I had the prey that I draw into it off of like multiple coin bonuses and then have it for when I need it.
Yeah, no, the Ionos are nice, but like the problem is you just don't have like the cipher to like, you know, you can never be like, okay, cipher for Countercatcher Research Pro is just gonna be like, how I find one of those or like figure it out later. So like that makes it kind of tricky. But I do think I actually made this comment to Caleb after our game, and I was like, I think not having to play Cypher and just never having like micro decision, like my drawing one off the Cypher, my drawing two off the Cypher, what am I stacking? And just saying like, I'm just gonna hit Iono and then just see the rest of my deck. Like I think that did help like decision.
That's pretty funny actually,
like,
yeah.
Throughout the game. Which is like I'm like, that's kind of valid. It's like, okay, I'll add myself to two, but I have double Goldengo, Fez draw, plus three cloaks, and it's like, I have what I needed.
So let's talk about this deck here that I have on the screen. 32nd place, $1,000 winning deck. Just a straight Charizard deck. That is no Pidgeot.
A 1K deck.
Yeah, this is John Roberts, so,
yeah, this is John Roberts. He's, you know, he's back. I think he hasn't played in a while.
Yeah, he's a very, very
straightforward Charizard
player.
I mean,
yeah.
What do we think about Charizard? We've been saying like, if someone can figure out Charizard, it's gonna be fine. It's gonna be good, right? Because like, there's some decks in the format like Joltik, right? Can't really deal with the Charizard. You know, there's so many things that can't deal with this. We got a 4-4-2 Dusknoir line, a 4-3-3 Charizard line, just like straight gas and consistency. What do you guys think about this Charizard deck? And does it have legs in this format?
I mean, probably. The best way to play Charizard was obviously Dragapult Charizard. I think that deck's like fine. As my friend Jackson Ford said it best, it's a good day one deck, but it's a bad day two deck. But I think like if you're gonna play Charizard by itself, I think you have to kind of lean more into like this idea of Dusknoir. I really wanted to make Terapagos Charizard work. That was a deck that I wanted to play to Atlanta at the start of the format, but unfortunately Dragapult got way too popular and I had to ditch that deck immediately. But I thought that deck was probably gonna be BDIF if Dragapult wasn't like so dominant. So I'm like, Charizard's just kind of mediocre. Like if you're gonna play it, you might have to play with Dragapult. This more like straightforward approach of like just four ghosts, like very heavy Zard count, two Shiyu, probably seems like the best way to play Charizard right now. Also, like Ghost Charizard is a really good combo. You can board wipe your opponent while also doing a bunch of damage with Burning Darkness. So
yeah. Yeah.
I would assume this is better in a Dragapult than like other Charizard variants.
Yeah, I really like this deck. Played a game or two of it on the ladder, and like just the fact that, you know, again, you're very reliant on like getting Brawly out, but other than that, it's like, oh, I'm gonna Iono my basics or like the pieces I need. Again, like just plays, you know, thick enough lines so you can find these pieces. I think like these no engine decks are very scary because, you know, there's no Fez, there's no Pidgeot, there's no Noctowl. I mean, it's just like, all right, you can Iono, and it's like, do you have it, right? It's like,
I think
but Charizard is one of those decks where if you can just get two Charizards into play, then like sometimes that is just enough to win a game.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think the point of this deck is that you're not really trying to like build up a board where like you have like Pidgeot and like Vez on board where you're like never whiffing Gust. I think it's just more like you're just trying to like nuke your opponent's board with Dusknoir and then make your opponent have to deal with Charizard swinging for main like big damage, and then you can just kind of like you can make your board really big where it's just two Charizard, nothing else. You don't need you know all this other fluff in play like Fez or something or like Pidgeot. Because whenever I play Zard, usually now it like games, you know, are a lot more losable when your opponent just can boss your Fez or Pidgeot for game. But when your board is just double Charizard after you just went like Dusknoir three times, your opponent can't deal with it. It's pretty scary.
It's like Dusknoir, Iona to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, can you take out two Charizards before I take, you know, last couple prizes? Probably not. And then the bundle, I'm assuming that's why there's a bundle in the deck. Because like in the late game, you can just go like pop bundle and Burning Darkness.
Right. The problem is like, you can only find bundle with one of your two Ultra Balls or your Brock Scouting, like that, and it or Trolley. Like, I mean, like,
yeah,
I like some of the pieces here.
True,
but like
I could see an Artisan.
Is, like, tricky. I wonder if you like Trolley for bundle against a Badoo deck, and,
yeah,
like, get it
probably,
going early,
yeah.
So we can go like bundle and then like Dusclops KO the Badoo. I don't know if you're doing that, but like,
I mean, the combustion attack KOing a Badoo is great, you know,
it's not bad actually. Yeah. That's why,
that,
yeah, three Charmeleon,
definitely why I played it, yeah.
I could see maybe like a Charmeleon getting cut for like a Artisan or something, so you can loop bundle. I think like the idea of the deck, it's kind of like a reverse Dragapult deck. You just sit there and itchy pollen and then build up this board with ghosts, and then you just blow them up with ghosts instead of Phantom Dive ghosting. You just go ghosts and then you come in with Charizard. So it's kind of the same logic as Pulsard, I guess, or Poltnor.
Yeah, I mean, as a wrap up our Milwaukee conversation here, we'd be terrible if we didn't talk about the top results here.
Yeah.
So, you know, Christian LeBell, his interview will be coming up next. He did take it down with Raging Bull. We saw a lot of Dragapult in top cut. We had a 14-player ASIM cut. Mm-hmm. I think probably our biggest ASIM cut ever. It was actually at 29 match points, not 30. And I thought that was pretty interesting for a bigger tournament. But got a couple end Zoroarks, got a Flareon, got a couple Gardevoirs, and one Joltik Box. I mean, what stands out to you for this top, you know, this ASIM cut, this top 14 cut? Is there anything, like, crazy? I mean, two end Zoroark is kind of big, you know.
I was going to say, yeah, the end Zoroark deck is probably the biggest surprise. I wasn't surprised to see all the Dusknoirs and Gardies and Raging Bolt, Joltik, like, stuff like that. But, yeah, the end Zoroark deck, two in ASIM is kind of crazy. But it's all, I think it's, like, the same build.
I mean, and we do have to call it out. I mean, like, Gardevoir did not win another major, right? And it won four in a row. I got stopped in top eight, but again, I think the big standout, we saw end Zoroark show up in Seville the weekend before, but then now we saw a lot of players including Zoroark EX as their choice, and even saw three end Zoroark in top 16. So good deck for the event. I think they were ready for it. Lucas Zing brought a spicy list. I think that Liam Halliburton cooked up Evan Pletsky, I forget if it was the same build or not, but he's the reigning seniors world champion, sorry. This is his first event in the Masters division since aging up, and showed up in a big way. So, Eric's going through all the highlight cards, right? I mean, some of the big standouts. I mean, so the Lucas Ingle played four copies of Serrano. And if you don't know what Serrano does, then that makes sense because you're a normal person. But for everyone who knows the game well too well, Serrano lets you search your deck for up to three Pokemon EXs, reveal to put them in your hand. So lets you find your end Zoroark EXs, but also lets you find your one-off copy of Bombardier EX. A bit of a joke card that we've seen before, but I think found a good use here of being able to go in and use its fast carrier attack, search your deck for three basic Pokemon put on their bench. Good way to find your Darumakas, which only have 80 HP, plus like your Monkey Door, your Reshiram, or whatever you want. Because this deck does not play any Nest Balls or any Ultra Balls. You're only finding Pokemon through Serrano or fast carrier.
Yeah.
How are you getting the fast carrier turn? I don't think you are ever.
Well, you have Cyrano.
You're
not meant to go get into it on your first turn going first. I think it's your first turn going second. You have ways to get into it.
Still use the attack even if you go second.
I see. It's cool.
So, like, if you open, like, Badoo or Cleffa, you can go Cyrano, Retreat, and Bombardier and attach with it. Or if you open an Ends Pokemon and Ends Castle, you can retreat into it, things like that.
Looks like they were going second with this list. Had to be, right? There's no way this is going first.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably go first or second.
I don't know. You're not finding any Pokemon if you go first with this list.
Yeah. But like Zorg likes to play from behind anyways, right? You don't want to just aggressively like bum rush your opponent. You wanna use reversal.
Yeah. And double countercatcher is a notable inclusion. Did include the Defiance Band, the Power Glass, more ways to chain the Zoroark attacks in those matchups where you just need to.
Yeah, Darmanitan is just broken. I played Enzoroark to a cup like a couple weeks ago, got top four with it, and the deck felt kind of insane. I was like, oh shoot, this deck just farms Dragapult and Gardevoir like no tomorrow. And Goldango is pretty decent too. It's not a bad matchup either. This deck is definitely one that I wasn't surprised to see do well. Was surprised to see players like Lucas playing it, but I'm not surprised to see the deck have a ASIM cut for sure. I think this deck is really good, and I don't think it's going to be like super popular or anything because it is hard to play, and I guess people aren't really attracted to the idea of it because it is a little bit more like tactical, but it's cool. I think the deck does have a place in the meta right now just because it's so good against like two of the best decks.
Yeah, I mean, let's stop our Milwaukee conversation and shift our focus towards Portland a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Raging Bolt going up in popularity. What else is good in the meta for Portland? I mean, if you were going to Portland right now, what would you sleeve out based on the meta?
Right now, I would consider Goldango again, or I would play Joltik Box.
How about you, Maddox? What do you think?
Yeah, I think decks have to respect the Raging Bolts and Joltik Boxes being around. So I think like Dragapult should be going like faster builds, things like Rare Candy, maybe going back to Arvin's, things like that, maybe not even playing Unfair Stand. In a spot like that, I do think, you know, again, Goldango Enjoyer. I mean, like, you know, if it was tomorrow, of course, I'd sleeve it up because the deck I'm most comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I do think a deck like an Enzoroark, if they're able to go and, you know, capitalize and build that board could be good. The Eevee Box deck is pretty solid. I think as well, like, but, you know, Goldango, again, you Joltik Box and Raging Bolt, I think, will be a little less well positioned because of them being faster decks. If people will be ready for that, but I can also see that, you know, maybe he's up a couple next tournaments. I think like Utrecht, there's a few other ones. I think maybe Santiago is before. There's a few tournaments.
Melbourne's coming out too, right?
Melbourne, yeah. So maybe a few of those tournaments, you know, scare off any Turbo hate or Goldango hate. If Goldango continues to underperform, could be a good call.
You just put Rapska on your deck and, you know, just you'll beat Bolt after that.
Yeah, for sure.
Dustin or Rapska.
Dustin Rapska. Yep, exactly. Who cares about that? Well, I think the thing is, if we're going to see more Dragapult or more Raging Bolt than Joltik Box, I think decks like Enzoroark get a bit worse because that deck does not have good matchup into either of those two decks. So,
very bad.
Probably we're going to see the meta shift a little bit towards these more like aggressive style decks. Mainly, like, the point is, like, can your deck aggressively beat down Guardian Dragapult consistently? Is the question. And I think that's what Jolting and Raging Bolt probably do the best right now out of any deck in the format, other than maybe Goldango. But even Goldango, like, has to play a bit differently than those decks in those matchups. Not just, like, put a Goldango in play and just kill Budu and call it a day. You actually have to, like, set up your board first and, you know, play very, like, cautiously with how you're approaching the matchup. Or, like, Raging Bolt and Jolting Box, you just ooga booga, just do attacks as fast as possible and start to make it so they just don't have enough time to set up their board. Or by the time they do, you've taken a big enough lead where you can't lose.
Yeah, I was trying to see if there was any like that Lily's Clefairy deck with the Teal Mask Ogre Pong.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's kind of good right now.
It's cool. It might be better with Raging Bolt being more popular.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. With Raging Bolt being more popular, and even Joltik Box too.
I think the hard part is like the top players are still going to play Dragapult and Gardevoir. You know, I mean, we might see a few.
Yeah.
You know, get over the pressure that Christian Labella does. We'll talk about that with him next.
Speaking of Christian Labella,
the interview coming up.
Let's jump right into that interview next. We got to start wrapping up, getting towards that interview. So next up is Christian Labella talking about all things Raging Bolt. So stick around for that interview. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Beach Court Podcast. We're here with the most recent champion of the Milwaukee Regional Championships last weekend. Christian Labella has joined us. He took down the tournament with Raging Bolt, a deck that a lot of players felt as a fraud coming in or not really a good play. And Christian chose the deck and took the deck all the way to finals and, you know, beat some awesome players along the way. So we're going to hear from Christian and his whole story. But Christian, first off, is quick intro. How you feeling, man? Like, when did you get home? How's your bank account, you know, feeling? I know it's not there yet, but, like, how you feeling? Like, it's coming? What's your thoughts and emotions?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling pretty good. I got back last night. Right now, my bank account is in the trenches. So I needed this.
Yeah.
But yeah, but definitely feeling good after this weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course, right? You've won regionals a few times as a senior. I'm sure as a master, it's a little different. I know you were in a finals before, you made top cut plenty of times. How does, like, finally punching that, like, master's regional win feel?
Right, it felt really good. It did feel really good. Yeah. It felt like I was, like, my past couple of seasons as a master was, like, all working towards something, and, like, it was this point. So it definitely feels really good to, like, see all this, like, hard work paying off.
Did you have any, like, nerves going into finals? Like, you know, kind of trying to get that monkey off your back in masters?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What were you experiencing, like, when you walked up on stage in finals?
I was very nervous. Yeah, like, that finals match was very important. It meant, like, a lot to me. So I was just, like, I don't know if, like, you could tell in the, like, if you were watching, but I was, like, very nervous. I was, like, shaking up there.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, you look calm. You did good.
Thank
look
you.
Calm.
Thank you.
Yeah, so let's get a little bit of your backstory. Go ahead, Max. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get a lot into finals and all that other stuff. Well, a quick background for folks who you don't know, you know, might know Christian LaBelle as the regional champion, but knew you a little better as a person. Tell us about where you're from, how long you've been playing, and what's your favorite Pokemon?
Okay, I'm from Canada, like, around the Toronto area. How I got
how
into
long you've
Pokemon.
Been how long you've been playing?
Yeah.
How long you've been
Oh,
playing?
I've been
Sorry. Yeah.
playing competitively. I think I started 2018 season, like, after 2018 Worlds is when
About
I started
7 years. And
yeah,
I was as a senior.
Around there. Yeah, I started as a senior, didn't play juniors. The way I, like, learned how to play was in my elementary school. Pokemon cards were, like, a really popular thing. Not playing the game, but, like, turning them and, like, having them. So, like, I, like, had a decent amount. I'm like, I was, like, curious, and I wanted to know if there was, like, a way to play the game. Like, if there was a game with it. And eventually that led to, like, me going to a card shop and then learning how to play it, and it, like, all kind of, like, snowballed from there.
That's like the story, man. That's like what we want, right? That's that's how you're supposed to get in the game. What's like, give us like one of those like weird stories where you're like, man, I had this like, you know, first edition Charizard that I bent and I had no clue. Like, did you have any of those stories where like you had some cards in elementary or like some fake cards that, you know, oh my God, you know, this isn't real. Did you have any of those like kind of stories that when you're in elementary and middle school?
Yeah, I had a pretty bad one where it was like, you know, on Darkrai EX and Mewtwo EX, and like that was like a really big deck, right? I had both of those cards, like both those, and like a Shaymin EX, but like not like setup Shaymin, just like a different Shaymin EX. Like, one of my friends had this mighty Puchina. It was Puchina, like the little dog one.
Yeah,
but like it was a fake one, and it had 1,000 HP. But I didn't know. Like, I was, this is like, I was like, like seven, and I saw that. I'm like, this guy's broken. He has so much HP. I'll give you all of my EXs for this one card. And then, like, I came home, and I was like, I was showing my dad, like, look what I got. I traded all my things for this 1,000 HP guy. And he's like, it was fake. And I was like, that's so sad. So that was probably like the most notable one. But yeah.
They got you good.
Well, that's hilarious. Learn Christian's lesson, everybody. And hopefully you don't have to go win a regional to go buy back your old EXs. So.
Yeah. So you said you got into Pokemon through your elementary school. So what helped you kind of like be successful as a senior? And like, what was that transition into being a master? You know, what really kind of put you over the top, you know, you feel like, you know, because you had some success as a senior, a little different ranks, you know, once you get the master. So kind of talk to the people about like what that process was like coming from a senior to a master.
Yeah. So in seniors, my first season, I was not good at all. Like, I was pretty bad. You know, just getting pretty low placements even for a senior. But then like I got a coach in my area who like kind of taught me like how to sequence and like all that, like deck building and all that. Like, really helped me with that. So. That really like helped me be more successful. My next season was way better than my previous one. Then COVID hit, and I aged up during COVID, so that was a big thing. That got me into online testing a lot, because of like COVID. That's the only thing we could do. There's like no in-person things, so like I was just grinding a lot online. So when I got into Masters, it was the first couple of regionals, I, like, completely bombed Masters. Like, I was doing a lot of testing. But seniors is, like, last round semesters and the end earlier. So I was like really not ready with like how long days were gonna be, like in day one as master. So it was like very mentally draining, and like mentally I just wasn't prepared for that, at least for the first couple events. But then as like more events came, I got used to it. I started playing like more live, and yeah, like I think what really like led me to like see better results was just like grinding like a lot of games, like in testing or just like on the live ladder. So it's probably the best advice I can give, like just play a lot of games on live is very efficient and worth your time.
So like Raging Bolt, I mean, how many games do you think you grinded of that? Again, Milwaukee is your first regional of the rotation, so like if you had to guess a number.
I'd say on live, like around 100, I'd say.
100? And plus yeah, more in person, like it sounds like.
Sorry?
It sounds like some in person, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In person, not as much as 100, but definitely, like, up there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a lot of top players really, you know, look down on Raging Bolt in this format specifically, and, you know, call a bad deck here and there. You know, how do you, like, let that weigh on you when you're choosing a deck for a tournament? You know, obviously you're testing and it feels good, right? And you trust your testing. But, like, you know, in the back of your mind, you've got these top players saying, like, it's not good, it's not good, it's not good. So, like, how do you, like, work through that process? You know, what specifically do you like to do to, you know, figure out if someone's right or wrong, or, you know, what their opinions are and things like that?
Yeah, I usually don't really care what the top players say. Like, if I'm playing a deck in testing and it's like a really high win rate compared to like everything else, but that deck is like viewed like pretty poorly from the public, like I don't really care if they say, because like my results are like very reliable to me. So like I just go based on that. I don't really take into consideration what anyone else thinks. I just trust like my log and like my games.
Yeah, how do you like to log your games? That's a great question. You know, some people use, you know, apps like Trading Court and other tools that are out there. How do you like to log your games to determine what your win rate is? You know, and use data to make decisions.
Yeah, I am very old fashioned. I just have a notebook and a pen, and I just love like it. On ladder games, like played against Gardevoir, win. Yeah, sometimes I go into more detail, like what happened during this game. Most of the time, it's just like Gardevoir, when did I brick? No. Did they brick? No. And then, like, I just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's good, because like, it's hard to deck select these days, right? I mean, there's the meta is so wide, you know. So talk about your testing process for Milwaukee specifically. Were you between a couple of decks, or did you always know you were playing Raging Bolt? And, you know, how'd you narrow down, you know, into this new format? How'd you narrow down your deck to Raging Bolt?
There's like 2.5 decks I was considering. So like the half deck I was considering was Gardevoir, but then I decided I didn't want to play it after I saw Chao win an event with it. So I knew everyone was going to play it. I just did not want to play Gardevoir Mirror. Then Brent won with his list, and then another guy won with Brent's list. So everyone was just playing Brent Cardi. I'm like, okay, I do not want to be playing the mirror all day. So that was kind of out of the consideration pretty quickly. But the two decks I was mainly considering was Bolt and Eevee Box. I thought Eevee Box also had a really good meta spread. And the reason I didn't play the deck was the Gardevoir matchup was not as good as Bolt's Gardevoir matchup. And also, like, Eevee Box, at least my list that I was playing, felt like pretty fragile compared to Bolt. Like, things can go wrong pretty fast with that deck, and you kind of need a lot more on your first turn than Bolt does. And you also are more vulnerable to Bidoo than Raging Bolt is. So I ended up leaning more towards Bolt, and I just decided to like focus on that more. Yeah.
Awesome. Any follow-ups there, Max?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's great advice. So like you're saying, trust your testing, block out the noise from everyone else, and if you think a deck is good, then that deck is good. You know, I guess, got to ask about, you know, you're a big F-block enjoyer. I'd say lots of success with Arceus and Regi Drago as well. I mean, how did that feel out of rotation, saying, I can't play these guys anymore, I need to pick up something new? Were you nervous about that, or you just said, hey, I trust myself as a player, and I can, you know, lock in a new deck and test for what's for the best?
It was pretty weird. Like, I was definitely very sad to see them go, mainly because I really like the V-Star mechanic. Like, just like holding your V-Star like late game just felt like so broken, and it's just like really good to do. Now you don't have that anymore, which is pretty sad because I feel like it's very skillful to know like when to use like a V-Star depending on what deck you're playing. So like just not having that option anymore just felt pretty weird. Yeah, definitely sad to see the V-Stars missing. And like it also like the rotation of the set made you realize like how broken some cards were. It's like for heavy vol specifically, like yeah, I just felt like all my decks just suck now because I don't have a heavy vol on them. Like it just like very it really changes the way you build your decks.
You're a jewel seeker for heavy ball, right? Like, that would unlock so much.
I mean, a redeemable ticket, it's fine.
I don't know. I do want to ask though, just on the V-Star topic, Legacy Star or Starbirth? Which
Oh,
one? I
it's
know you have to pick between your two children, but which
my two
one?
children.
Which one do you remember using more fondly back in the day?
It might be, I think it's because of recency bias, but probably Legacy Star. I just like, bro, two cards from discard is just so broken. Like Arceus is like good because like you kind of guaranteed setup like every game. Like if you set up with Regidrago and you just have Legacy Star like threatening game like at any point, like this is just so broken. You basically have two ace specs a game.
Two ace specs is just so crazy good. All right, well, let's transition to talk about your list, some of the specifics on your list. You chose to play the Noctowl version of the deck. Some people were kind of like on the boat of like playing the no Noctowl version, it being a little bit better. Did you test the no Noctowl version leading up to this event? And what ultimately just made you, obviously you're an Arceus joiner, so you like getting every two card you want. But what made you kind of like decide, all right, Noctowl is correct?
I didn't test the no Noctowl version at all. I really like the Noctowl version mainly because like with Badoo, just like terrorizing the format right now. Noctowl is really strong, getting my early game Crispin, so like get the energies flowing and all that. It's just like if I'm able to get like three energies on a Baby Bolt turn two, then I feel like I'm beating like most bolts. And with Noctowls, it just allowed me to do that like a lot. I don't really see myself being able to do that with no Noctowls in my deck.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what was the 61st card that you really wanted to find a spot for in your deck list and you couldn't find a spot for?
Yeah, that would be Turo, Professor
Well,
Turo. I
oh.
definitely really like that card is because if you look at my list, a Sob Trap or like Maractus Trap like is super strong against my deck. I only have Prime Catcher.
Prime Catcher.
Yeah, if like a deck just went like Genesect, put a tool on it, and Maractus like something on my board, like I kind of like lose. This is really not good for me. Yeah, and then Turo's just good all around, with Monkey Dory, like putting damage on stuff, and what do you call it? Yeah, Dragapult just spraying damage on your board. Also, getting pick off a Noctowl, like I really wanted to have a Turo on my list. It was in my list like a week before the event, and I decided I wanted to play Judge instead. But yeah, I definitely miss having a Turo. If I could play 61 cards, it'd probably beat that.
Turo. Yeah, Turo's a good card, man. But you know what else is a good card? And Maddox knows all about this. He's a Judge Path enjoyer just like you were for a very long time. So what led you to put the Judge in the deck? And what are the best use cases for it? I'm a big Judge enjoyer in Raging Ball. My list, I was just looking at today to see how different it was from your. I'm like four cards off from you. I played two Judge.
Oh,
Yeah,
damn.
because like I just wanted to like I just wanted to knock down for Judge and like Crispin, whatever I need to do and like just attack, bro. Like attack Judge like seems really good into the format. So what did you find the best use cases for Judge for you this weekend?
So the main matchup where I mainly used Judgeon, or where Judge was like my main strategy, was Goldengo. That was like a big one because like a lot of games it's hard to like prize race them because like you gotta put a two prize drain board most of the time or just open one. So you can't really like take the first two. And that's like how you win the matchup. You take the first two, then go 2-2-2. But like it's hard to do that if you open a two prize because if you try to like assault landing, kill them, like they have probably like a million cards in their hand and they're gonna go like E-Search Pro, Counter Catcher. So like with the Judge, it just allowed me to like judge Air Zero Phantom attack, and they can't Evo get Goldangos in play preemptively, or else instead of Judge, I just like Prime Catcher take first two. So like with a Judge, it makes them hit Goldango EX, like Energy Surge Pro, Counter Catcher, Auto T-Prizer. That's like three cards already out of the like the four cards they need, and they don't have like any draw on play. The one downside to this is like with the Pango version, they could Evo double Dracloak and have that, but they do need like a lot on their first turn, like Poffin for two Droopies, assuming they have a bench, like another bench Gimme Gold down, and then Evo to that. But like even with the two Droopies, I'd say it's like still not that likely they hit it at least two out of three games. So yeah, Judge basically like made the Goldango matchup like really favored in my opinion. That was the main thing. Also, just like the decks in general, where I didn't feel like I had a great matchup, like EV Box specifically. Like EV Box does need like a lot to like set up on turn two. And like that's like my worst matchup, I think. EV Box. So like main strategy there, same thing. Like put Sudan down, attack with Phantom, judge them. They need like a lot. They don't have a Terra in play on the bench already, or else I just prime that and take the first two. So they need to draw a Terra Pokemon, like a Knocked Owl, and like all that stuff to like function. And it's really hard for them to do that if I'm judging them early. So that was basically like the main thought process time point judging, as well as like it's just really effective into like pretty much every deck turn two this format.
Yeah makes sense.
Last tech inclusion, I think the Jamming Tower, the notable tech inclusion. It was a fortunate top deck for you during finals right when you needed it.
Yes,
but I know that was probably your intended use for it, but what was your intended use for it? It was mainly there for Gardevoir hate. Was it for dealing with those luxurious capes? Tell us a little about, you know, what kept that inclusion in the list.
Yeah, Jamming Tower.
You play
just,
your own
like,
Bravery Charm cards as well. Sorry, yeah. I also wanted to ask, because you played a Bravery Charm with it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jamming Tower is just like a good card in general. Luxury Escape, so I can still snipe the Baby Bolts or the
Dracloaks.
Yeah. That was one application. The other one was, Guardy. Like, if they misstep and put like a lot of damage on their Drifloom or Skirmtail and charm it. Yeah, Jamming Tower free prize. But the main reason was so that I can just bump Air to Zero and remove guys off my board. Like, if they're setting up like a three prize turn per game next turn, I can just Jamming Tower, get the guys off my board. It's mainly for like removing guys off my board. That's why like I didn't have Turn my deck overall, because like I thought that I could just like, I felt like I could just do that with my Jamming Tower, you know, because like Air to Zero is always going to be in play. So it's like basically discard my Hoot Hoot, or not my Hoot Hoots, my Knocked Owls, like my Squawk, if I have to put that down, discard all of those Pokemon. And yeah, the other card, Bravery Charm, that was mainly for Dragapult. Same for the three prize turn, they put like 10 on Phanaratum, or like they have Hawlucha in hand to like put 10 on Phanaratum or a Hoot Hoot, just charm that, prevent that from happening, so they win the game. Same like with the Monkey, so they can't like double Monkey or triple Monkey, like Phanaratum or something. Just charm that, prevents that. It's also just good into like decks with Blood Moon. I can just charm a Bolt and Blood Moon can't one shot it, so they need to have Gust with that. So it's just like a good card all around.
Yeah, I really like your list. I mean, it's kind of, you know, kind of operates like these Pidgeot quick search decks in a way, right?
Yeah.
You know, Maddox and I have both said this a couple of times, that, you know, Bolt's just one of those decks that you can put like 10 bad cards in it and it's a really good deck still, because like it has that inherent strength of just being able to one shot anything in the format. So yeah, I really, really like your list. Well done. Congratulations on your run. Let's kind of transition, you know, to the highlights of your tournament. And, you know, I think if anyone looks at, you know, Limitless Labs or PokéData, wherever they look at the match results, they're like, holy crap, you beat one of the best Gardevoir players and Brent Tonneson on the planet twice. You know, talk us through like that matchup specifically. How do you navigate the matchup, and how were you able to beat one of the best Gardevoir players on the planet twice?
Yeah, that matchup is very scary. That was like the matchup I was like most scared of going to the tournament, because I didn't expect a lot of Brent Guardy, like playing the exact 60. That's probably like the only thing I had on it. Like, I know the exact 60, because like I don't think a lot of people are going to change a card from that list. So just having access to like what my opponent can do in their turn is very strong. So the Guardy matchup basically essentially comes down to how fast they can get like Candy Guardian play. So basically, if I'm able to take the first two, I feel like I'm in a decent position. If I can take the first three without Kenny Guardy, I feel like I am winning a game like 100% of the time. But overall, during the tournament, I actually didn't know whether it was correct to like opt first or second into Brent Guardy. Like the main thing about going first is I can get an attachment on my baby bolt, then turn two, you know, do 90 to like snipe routes. But in testing, I found that Brent Guardy going first doesn't do like anything at all. So that was the other consideration. I ended up choosing first into Brent Guardy against like people who were playing Brent Guardy just so I can get attachment. But when I hit Brent playing Brent Guardy, I ended up choosing second because like they don't really do much turn one. So I have a chance to donk them as well, as you saw on my stream game against Brent game three. Just having that extra like wind gone to like donk them is just really strong. And like, I don't know, I feel like if I let Brent play the game, it's just not good. I should just choose second, hope he doesn't play the game. I can just donk him. Also, if you choose second and you open your judge and judge them before they can do anything, that is also like very good. So yeah,
just get fan run them down, judge, and then fan call afterwards, and they're just scrambling.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is correct overall to choose second, though. I think second is just like they just don't do anything going first a lot of the time. So yeah,
awesome. I know we want to dive into like your top four and finals matches on stream against Dragapult and some of that matchup. But before that, were there any other notable matches from the Swiss rounds that you want to highlight, right? You know, you were a number one seed going in, record of 10-0-2. Any highlights of those matches to get there, or it was just, I just did Raging Bull things?
Yeah, my round one, very, very interesting game.
I was hoping it was a no-show. Oh, well, was it no-show?
It was a no-show.
Okay, because I saw the list, and I'm like, bro, that would have been an interesting match.
Yeah.
For those that haven't done their homework yet, the list had. Have you seen the list yet on Labs? By the way, Christian.
Yeah, I actually just saw it today.
Yeah. So, Andrew Nunes submitted a list with. It has Zorark, 4-1 Guardiline, 4 Klefkies, a 1-1 Dragapult, 1 Gouging Fire, 1 Drifloom, an E-Switch, 4 Crispin, 4 Iota, 4 Research, 4 Boss. So like, I was looking at this and I was like. I mean, also, this would have been fun to play against.
Yeah, also look at the Zorua.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even end Zorua.
I didn't notice that.
Well, Andrew was maybe cooked a little too much in the kitchen, slept in a little bit, gave you a good start to the day. That's too funny. So
yeah. But for an actual game, I hit Ian. Playing his EV box deck, and this is what I think is my worst matchup in the field, but I was able to win that because of judged. You know, they just need a lot of pieces, you know, on their turn two. So I judged them. You know, I can force them to like and like get all that, and like it's the same thing with Brent. Like, Ian is a really good player. Hopefully, I can judge them, and they don't get to play the game. Yeah, I got very lucky in that set, but yeah, just further proving that Judge is a really good inclusion in this list.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said, mine has two. Would you ever consider like a second copy of Judge in the list?
Probably not. There's like, I'd probably put Turo in first and all that.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I don't know, if you like prize Judge, like it's just unlucky, you just go a different route, but like...
yeah.
You do have Palpad if you like want to like judge twice throughout the game.
Yeah.
But like I probably wouldn't put a second judge in. I think one like serves its purpose.
Just didn't know how strong it was. It's like, okay, yeah. I really, really, really want it, you know.
Yeah.
We had Arceus V Star back in the list. We've been playing a lot more judge, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump into top four, right? So your top four in finals matches on stream, both against Dragapult. And both against both different variants, right? Duskanor and the straight Dragapult. So you kind of want your insight into, you know, how does that matchup go, you know, and how did you expect it to go, and how did it play out on stream?
So out of the both lists, the Duskanor version is more scary for red deck. It's definitely more scary, mainly because it plays candies, something that Makani's version didn't play. So it, like, the no candy version just made Baby Bolt even stronger. Just like sniping those Dracolokes, it's just like really strong. I don't think either of us played Crispin, so like it does the same thing, like sniping all that energy. So nothing really changes there. However, like the Dust Storm version, they can just set up like 3 prize, 4 prize turns with that. Also, they can like candy Dustnor and just Dustnor my active bolt to like deal with that, which is pretty scary. That's why that matchup is like a lot more sketch compared to Makani's version. Makani's version, I feel like, is like pretty favorite for my deck. This one's closer to like 55-45 in my favor, maybe like 60-40. Yeah, so on the stream games, game one, I guess my top four match, if I remember correctly, like I was not able to like get like Era Zero and my Mew, like fed all my support guys down. So I was just super vulnerable to like a late game Iono, and that's what happened. I got Iono'd late game and I just lost because of that. But then games two and three, my opponent had like very rough starts, and like Baby Bolt was just able to capitalize on that. But yeah, I do feel like with the Dustnor version, it is definitely like more inconsistent than the other version. That's why like people opt for the other version. So like it is definitely expected to happen like at least one of the games, I'd say. But I got very lucky that it happened like two games.
Let's talk about game three a little bit.
Yeah.
Have you like watched back Azul's chat at all by chance?
I have not.
So like the whole chat was all like, okay, Baby Bolt's prize, what do we do? And everyone was like, we're attacking with Fez. Like, attack with Fez has to be the route here. And so, like, the first turn, you didn't go for it. But then, like, after he continued to break it, he attached to Fez. We saw you go for it.
Yeah.
Was it in your plan to go that route? Or did him attaching kind of, like, see that? And kind of, like, did you ever attack with Fez this tournament?
I did attack with Fez. Fez was, like, I had two Baby Bolts in my list, like, one of my previous lists for this deck. But then my friend pointed out to me that, like, well, he had two Baby Bolts. You can just attach the Fez if you prize your bolt, and it's, like, the same thing. So, like, that was definitely a consideration going through my head to, like, get the Fez set up early. But if I'm remembering correctly, game three, my opponent did not get, like, a droopy down. So,
yeah, he did. Yeah,
it's just, like, no rush for me to do that right there.
I think
just,
the other stadium down, so, like, you're able to do fan modem pressure just fine.
Yeah. I did open, like, a stadium in my hand, I think. Yeah, so no. I was just... Yeah, committed with that.
And then we saw Willio research way like four energies on like turn four or whatever, and at that point, you know, it's just like,
yeah,
all right,
he just wasn't able to do anything that game after
pretty sure he was like out of energy at the end of the game.
Yeah,
which was unfortunate.
Yeah, I saw him Vessel get no energy and didn't have two energies on that Dragon Bolt to attack, so I'm like, oh, I'm guessing we're just going all in with Blood Moon then.
Yeah.
So like that's Dragapult Dustnor. Talk us through the slow Dragapult matchup. Is it just like strictly just Baby Bolt or Fez, whatever's available, and then figure out the last, you know, four prizes from there?
Yeah. It is basically just that. Like that deck doesn't play Candy, doesn't play Crispin. They're not doing like a whole lot early game. Just snack a Baby Bolt. But then like make sure like you like try to get like Air Zero down as early as you can, Mew Fez, all that. Because, like, they play Unfair Stamp, they play, like, 4, I don't know. You're going to get disrupted. Make sure you just have, like, you can get out of it. If you can bench Latias, too, very important. They're going to try to counter-catch your Bidoo. Make sure they can prevent, like, at least one turn from Baby Bolt. So they can try to, like, evolve to Dragapult. But, yeah, the matchup is pretty favored. A lot of the time, you're able to, like, just, like, get your board to, like, a really, like, solid position where like even if they stamp you like early, like you're gonna draw out of it. Like if you have Latias down and all basics and you have three energies on your active bolt, like a stamp doesn't do anything. They can't counter catch or anything or like to trap. It's just like you're just kind of running away there for like the first three turns, and then you just got to make sure your board is like set enough to like take the last three after that, which is not unreasonable to do. It's very simple. Yeah.
Professor Sada, Bellowing Thunder, attack, you know?
So. Yeah.
Any other highlights from, you know, your finals match or, you know, or maybe, you know, what was that feeling right afterwards? Or maybe as you see the way the last game was going and you say, hey, I think I know where this is going, right? You know, how was that what were you kind of feeling on that moment?
Yeah, I was like, it's actually like really scary when like I have a lead that big in like game, like in the match, like I was on like match point, the final smash. I was like getting really far ahead. I was like in my head, like I was just thinking to myself, like, how can I lose this game? I'm so far ahead. I cannot throw away this opportunity. Like, how can I lose? It was like really stressful. So I was just like trying to take everything slowly and all that. The ending up winning, like, it still hasn't hit me, but it did feel really good. But like just going through my head, it's like, how can I lose this game? What actions can I take to potentially lose this game? Like, what are, like, you know, like, how do I not mess up? How do I not throw away this opportunity? Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure like the only way you could have lost that game would be like if you got like DQ'd or got like two double prize mad penalties. Like it was pretty rough, you know, for
you like
County there.
Jewel Seeker and shuffle your discard pile into your deck. Actually, that's reversible because we're on stream. I don't even know if that would like. Well, good stuff. I'm glad you didn't, misplay. Glad you locked in the win.
Yes, sir.
And plus your ticket to the World Championships. I think you're already in a pretty good spot anyways, but, you know, nice to have that nice auto invite. Now, Brady, whether you like it or not, you're now the de facto Raging Bolt expert on everything, always, until someone else does better than you with it. But for Raging Bolt for right now, what are your thoughts on moving forward? If you're going to Portland, maybe you are going to Portland, would you think Raging Bolt's the play? Or, you know, as you head into the rest of this format, how do you think decks, you know, should adjust to deal with Raging Bolt? Or how Raging Bolt should adjust to deal with that?
Yeah, I'm not going to Portland, but my friends who are going to Portland, I told them to play, that they should start testing and they should play EV Box. Because, like, as I said, EV Box has a pretty favorable Bolt matchup, and I think the rest of the matchup spread for that deck is pretty strong. So I actually probably wouldn't play Bolt to the next event. But I do think Bolt is still a good play. It's like, but is like gonna get respected, like definitely way more than it was respected at Milwaukee. I feel like a lot of lists, I can definitely see a lot of lists putting in like Maractus in their deck, like just a one of, like they saw like my only one switch cards. So I'm like, okay, maybe to slow down this baby Bolt, I can like counter catcher Maractus instead of Bidulok. And that can be like more, like that can slow me down more than Bidu. I can definitely see a lot of Dragon Ball decks doing that. I can also Joltik Box. That's the big thing. I think that deck's gonna like lower in play. Like a lot of the other rogue decks. I think so, because like your Bolt matchup sucks.
Yeah.
True.
It's bad.
Yeah, I think that's definitely gonna go down in play because I don't even know how good like your other matchups are. I don't think your Guardian matchup's that good either. I think all your matchups are bad with Joltik Box. I don't know how that's a deck.
I mean, it just beats Dragapult. That's really like main reason why, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But I do think that will go down and play. I think Zoroark will probably also go down and play.
Yeah.
Like all those like other like counter decks would go down and play. I think Dragapult will still remain the most popular deck. It's kind of hard for that to fall off. That deck is pretty broken.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how popular Bolt will be. Like I can see it jumping to the number two spot. Definitely won't surpass Dragapult, but I think Bolt's a fine play for next format. I just think next tournament, I think probably like something like EV Box will like do really good.
Yeah.
All right, Bolt believers, watch out for EV Box. But other than that, Christian Lavella still believes in you. Sleeve it up. Maybe play a Turo if you're worried about those Maractus. But you know, sounds like it's a good play. And again, Christian went on a fantastic run with it.
Thank you, thank you.
Yeah, so where are we gonna see you next? NAIC? Or...
Yeah, I'm doing an AIC.
Okay, so we'll see you at NAIC. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're excited. We'll have a new format then, right? New
set Destin
comes
Rivals,
out.
Yep.
Destin Rivals comes out.
Yeah.
And some YouTube. But before we head out, Christian, thanks for joining us. You got any shout outs or thank yous you wanna send out before we let you go?
Yeah. I'm going to shout out my sponsor, Endgame Sleeves. They are great sleeves. Please check them out. I also want to shout out, you know, everyone who, like, supported me, everyone who, you know, all my friends and family, everyone who even just said, like, congrats to me this weekend, like, made my weekend. Thank you so much. You guys mean so much to me. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, thanks for coming on the Beach Court Podcast. But right now we're going to get back to the episode, and so stay tuned. All right, that was Christian LaBella talking all things Raging Bull. Hope you really enjoyed that interview, so welcome back to the podcast. Before we get into Christmas Corner, I want to thank Nakam Anime Cafe for the continued support of this podcast. They got a new gaming shop coming up soon, so stay tuned for more details. Also, League Cup this weekend locally on May 10th at Nakam Anime Cafe, so come on out. Try to win your Zoroark champion map this weekend. Get some championship points. It's coming down to it. We'll talk all things championship points next week on this episode, give you some breakdown of the world's data. But Maddox, why don't you lead us in Crispin's Corner and tell us who was cooking in Milwaukee?
Let's do it.
Of course, of course. So anyways, as a reminder, how we tackle things here down in Crispin's Corner is we'll randomly look at a couple of lists that did not make day two, give them some extra credit. We're utilizing Arcanine publishing all their lists and the new Limitless Labs to be able to go and detail these. So, and also while we have the Rogue Deckmaster himself, LDF here, wanted his take on maybe who's the spiciest cooks in the kitchen this weekend for Milwaukee. So first off, need to give a little celeb shout to our own Eric Ridgway, who sleeved up a little bit of a spicy pick versus another friend of the pod, Nathan Stratford, who actually hit a friend of the pod, her friend Chris. So let's do let's battle some of their decks real quick. So Eric, of course, sleeping up other than Mirrodin EX. I think the theme deck version of Mirrodin, we see a the four Iron Hands, four Mirrodin, max consistency, four generators, and four 20 energy. Very consistently hitting those generators. But Nathan does have a tricky deck for us. Here we have the cast form toolbox. Cast form, of course, with a Singe attack. One fire energy can burn, and the Combusken to support it in the hand along with 55 energy. So, LDF, I mean, you're the Rogue Deckmaster. I mean, again, you know, Mirrodin isn't quite proven in this format, and Nathan Stratford has cooked up something here fierce. I mean, what do you think has this one?
I got to give it to Nathan, bro. I don't know, man. Eric, your deck is cooked, bro. Your start hand is going to be 6 light energy, and then you're just going to get farmed, bro. I don't know.
I mean, he opens like the cast form, gets the burn off like every time. Yeah. Eric, what do you think of me? What do you have to respond?
Yeah, I mean, if I just open Lone Magnemite, I'm just, you know, I'm boned for sure. If it's Lone Magnemite, 7 energy or 6 energies, you know, I'm hurting. But
I mean, he's came when he turned 2 and we Sunny Assist. I mean, like the because he plays the HP Magnemite.
Yeah, the Sunny Assist is scary, man. I'm not gonna lie to you, but before he KOs me, I'm gonna be KOing myself and putting 4 energy onto my Iron Hands and amping that thing very much and saying, "Have a nice day, bud. Let's move on."
I don't know, man. I think Nathan's got you cooked, bro.
Oh, it's kind of funny here. You know, Max, before we go on, like, there wasn't many people in the tournament that did play actual, like, straight Mirrodin, because everyone's calling Joltabox Mirrodin. But shout out to Anthony Bruno, one of my homies, actually did play Mirrodin. We were actually cooking on an actual Mirrodin list. And he ended up going 5-3, just, you know, missing out on day 2.
Just shy, yeah.
We were cooking up this list, and I think, like, just Mirrodin is still very good. Obviously, Iron Hands is good, Pikachu is good, but, like, just amping you very much as quick as possible. And in this list, like, we were very tech to beat Goldango, right? If you put the, you know, a tool on the Genesect to put shove Iron Thorns in the active, they're having a bad time. They're having a real bad time, and he ended up did beat a Goldango player using that strategy. So congrats to Anthony Bruno for going 5-3 with this list. I think straight Mirrodin is being slept on a little bit. I said this last week on the pod. My counter peers maybe put him in D tier, but Anthony Bruno showed us up. You got 5-3.
Yeah, it's actually funny. I feel bad, bro. He's running at 2 Charizard decks.
Well, he hit two Charizards, bro.
Well, I was next to him. We were both 4-0, and then he hit Jackson Ford, who was next to me, and he was playing Jackson Ford, of course, Zard. Playing Dragapult Zards. So.
Yeah, Jackson was telling me about that. I was talking
about and John Roberts, right, who top 32 Charizard list. So unfortunately, like, you know, hit a pretty good gauntlet of players, you know, with the spicy pick. So shout out to Anthony. But let's get back, highlight some other cooks that are in the kitchen. We're gonna generate a few numbers here real quick. We have 1486 with a Gardevoir versus 427. Okay, so just because we see some difference of placements here doesn't necessarily mean that they might be doing better or not. Let's see. Ooh, we have a
Dragapult
Charizard versus Gardevoir. So, listen, I think if you're a Dragapult Charizard player, like, this is why you play Dragapult Charizard. You're trying to hit a Gardevoir.
Oh, the ticket.
Trying to cook him up. Ooh, wait, but we got some spice here. Again, some notable pieces, the Gardevoir list player, including a Tatsugiri, but also the redeemable ticket, played three Driftlands and four Bravery Charms, plus Damn. Double Stadium. So really committing heavy to the Bravery Charms and Driftland being an attacker. They play the Brilliant Blender build along with nine Psychic Energy, so plenty of energies, as well as Arvin's to go with that Brilliant Blender and the two Rare Candy. Two TM Evo along with the Bidoof, so plenty of options going first of what to do versus a Dragapult Charizard. I think a real big hybrid list here did choose the Sparkling Crystal as the ace spec of choice, making it easier to attack the Dragapult or the Charizard, but also included Genesect, shut off the ace specs, a Luxurious Cape, help protect your Registered Cloaks, or Bench Charmeleon perhaps, and double Crispin, only three Arvin, but still the double Bidoof and the Hawlucha. So, all right, there's a lot to unpack here, guys. What do you like?
I'm gonna give this to the Pulsard because I think that Pulsard is really cool, and I like the idea of playing Monkey and Genesect. I actually was looking at a Pulsard myself for Milwaukee, and my draft did play Genesect and Monkey Dory in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, you know, Genesect, the Monkey Dory is really strong. You know, the issue I see in this matchup is Bidoof being strong on Dragapult's side early, but if you put the Bidoof in play, you know, you got the one cape, you got to cape it. And if you cape it, we could take two prizes on the Bidoof, which isn't very good. But if you don't cape it, we got Monkey Dory on the right. We've got Town Store. We got four Arvin. Any game this Gardevoir deck on the left goes second, I think they probably are going to cook this Charizard deck pretty easily.
Yeah.
You know, with four Charms, Town Store, four Arvins, two Evos, Brilliant Blender, nine Psychic. I mean, we got some max consistency over here on the right, you know, with this player. So I think I have to give it to Gardevoir on the right because the redeemable ticket, you know, it's just good, right? You know, your prize two Gardevoir, that's fine. You know, you go and get whatever you need out of the deck, and then you just play the ticket, and your Gardevoir's back in the deck. So you can't lose the game if your Gardevoir's a prize.
Two, yeah. I like it. Ticket's definitely underrated.
Yeah, I don't say. I mean, like, the Gardevoir list of them, they've been favoring, like, the Night Stretcher a lot, you know, like four copy Night Stretcher. The Gardevoir player here again, really only choosing and Andrew Banwell here only choosing like the one Super Rod as a recovery option. But again, with the three Driftloons, like you can keep chaining those attacks. So, and also, you really didn't want to prize anything. Redeemable ticket, lots of respect for that.
Yeah, a lot of people like have been like, oh, I lost because I prized both Guardy. I'm like, oh, true.
Yeah. To Alexis here, the Dragapult Charizard. I do think it's a spicy play. Deck, I'm a little worried about the consistency because there's a little maybe too many options here, but I mean, if you're able to get set up a board and double track, like Dragapult Charizard, Fez, Genesect down, Monkey, like I don't know if you can ever lose.
Yeah, aggressive Phantom Dives aren't bad either because then you can put damage on the board for Charizard and then Charizard's math gets fixed a little bit for Burning Darkness, which is nice. Yeah, cool. I like the Monkey and Genesect in the deck. That's what I would have probably played if I played Bulsar this weekend.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, was that a split decision, or did we?
Yeah, I think we're split.
We are. Oh my goodness.
Money match, LDF, stream it.
We gotta do it. Gotta do it.
I don't know how that money match is going, but hope you all have some fun with that. Let's move on to the next.
We can put an air fryer on it.
Oh my goodness! I'll get into that. not enough time in the pod for that. Ethereum 913 versus 1494. So we're actually right down the street here. 1494, another Gardevoir.
Oh my goodness, so much Guardy.
Well, we kind of expect that. What does it say? 913 versus Joltik Box.
Joltik Box. Okay.
This is the matchup they don't want you to know about. We have Stefan versus Alec.
Oh, the Mandazon.
Oh, it's a spicy list. Oh, he's got some
options here.
Oh, he's got some spice in there. Right. Yeah.
The Unfair Stamp and another Brilliant Blender Guardy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Lots to unpack here again. Stefan here with the Joltik Box, but not your mama's average Joltik Box. It includes the 1/1 Magneton as extra ways to accelerate that energy. Honestly, I like that as a little late game option without having to use Jolting Charge. Included the Penny as a switch option. Other than that, you know, pretty good to see. No Prime Catcher, though. It said include the Unfair Stamp as the A-spec choice versus Alec on the right with Gardevoir. Again, here, is this literally just the Brent build? A little different than that. Did include the Mew.
Yeah, it's got the Blender. He's got Blender, too.
Arvin, two Arvin with the Blender. The Mew EX did play a Turo and a boss. A lot of Gardevoirs we cut in boss. I'm glad to see a boss back in list. But still, four Night Stretcher, double Artisan, really respecting the Jamming Tower and the three monkeys and just your normal suite of attackers. So,
hear me out. We shove Iron Thorns. What do they do?
True.
Oh wait, Iron Thorns and Stefan's box too. Uh oh.
That's pretty bad. Yeah, yo. I think Stefan's got Alec cooked.
Yeah, no Fluttermane, no Klefki.
We just go solo Iron Thorns. What do they do?
Yep, that's fair. Just kind of just farms.
You can pull if you open up a ride on, you can just hand him in it out.
You can loan Thorns board state them. Yo, that's crazy. Broken deck.
All right, I got Jolted Box. Give me Jolted Box on this one. Cooking. We got the Magneton. We got the consistency. We can do Iron Hands, you know, 3 times if we need to. So give me the Jolted Box.
I'm trying to figure out what the cuts are. So, like, how did you squeeze a Magneton plus an Iron Thorns plus a Penny? Like, but hey, more power to him.
What's the energy count?
Yeah, the counter catch.
There's less Pokégear. One Pokégear. One Ultra Ball was cut. Grass and a Grass Energy was cut.
Yeah, okay.
That's not bad.
Works, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Jolting Box has flexibility, I think, to like squeeze in tech cards.
That is true. There is a lot you can do with it.
Yeah.
All right, our next matchup, number 444.
Lucky number 444. Let's go.
Hal Johnston with
Terabox. All right.
896. Here we have
Kirby, probably.
Oh, Frostlass.
Let's go.
All right, we got Hal Johnston with the Terabox versus Blake. With Frostlass Monkey Dory.
All right. We got Tura. We don't have any Switch. That's a problem.
Yeah. Blake did include the Maractus in the list as well as the Universal Luna.
Yep.
Again, a 3-4 Frostlass line and 3 Badoo. Really just leaning in the power of being able to just Itchy Pollen over and over and over again with your 4 Monkey Dory board. Including like Gravity Gemstone as well. Make things
good.
Trickier for the Badoo. And Terabox, what do we have over here again? Like Eric said, the rescue board instead of a Switch. I think it's a good call for under item lock, but it's not helping against Maractus and only one copy of Turo. Here's a question. I mean, like, can Blake get off the ground and get set up before getting Torrential Pump to a barrel?
That's what I'm saying. I it's a weird matchup. I would imagine if Blake can set up a really good board, Terra Box is unfavored, but Hal, you know, all Hal's got to do is get like a Teal Mask in the active or a Tropigos or, you know, Wellspring and just kind of aggressively just beat down Blake and just don't overbench your Owls if you don't have to.
Don't overbench in general because, like, the first time you Wellspring, the immediate response is going to be Maractus Corner or something.
Yeah, plus like, Unfair Stamp, and then you're screwed.
Yeah, so like, if you've got Latias on board and you've already, like, got rid of your Turo or you used it once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to get interesting here. I mean, this is going to be one of those matches that probably takes the full 50 minutes.
Oh, 100%.
You know, we're probably only playing one game here. you know, I don't know. I think I'm going to give it to Frostlass.
I'm going to give it to Terabox. The matchup, there's a Turo in the deck. There's, like, Wellspring. It's, I don't know. Like, I haven't really tested the matchup, but I would imagine that Terabox, if played well, probably can just manage a board with, like, good attackers and just be like, whatever. I don't really care about your Frostlass spam. I'll Wellspring you. I'll go boss Wellspring, knock out double Frostlass. Not really too worried about that. And you just set up 2 attackers, you know, it's fine.
LDF, we got a lot of money matches to resolve, man.
No, we do. Honestly, we do.
I think the funny part here is, right, I mean, you know, you're going, Hal's going to go first with Terabox. Going to go fan, Rotom, set up the board, do everything behind the scenes, Badoo. Okay, let me go extra wide. Let me do all my things ready. We get my Latias into play, whatever it is. And then, like, Blake's like double buddy poffin for like another Badoo plus double Snow Run. It's like, oh no.
Yeah, I hit Frostlass. So why did I win that?
Danger.
Yep.
I do think Blake might have a little trouble setting up. Again, like, I know some of these decks have played Trolley before.
Yeah.
You know, you're very reliant on, like, I think finding out Artisan, like, get your Monkey Dories out and a few putty poffins. But 4 Arvin, 4 Research, 4 Iona. So maybe just get there. Right,
I just noticed Terabox is playing a Jamming Tower.
Yeah, Jamming Tower's been in the deck recently just because it's really good against Gardevoir and it's good against like Dragapult and stuff, I think, to get rid of the Luxurious Keep.
Right. I think we got time for one more, Menix.
All right, last one.
Let's see.
693 versus 1074. 693. We have a Goldango to Dunsparce. Ah,
okay, there we go. Yeah, I get some cheese. Let's go.
Versus 1074, we have another Terabox.
I'm going to Pikachu the death out of you. You better
God. But this one's got the Gal VX in it. Oh, bro, they're cooking.
Called the Galvantula.
Yep.
I actually played against the Jolting Box with the Galvantula. And the Gravity Mountain here, not relevant. Oh, Baby Dango, though.
Baby Dango's not bad, yeah. Honestly, you know what? This is a close matchup. I'm going to say that it's favored for Joltik Box because the Goldengo Dunsparce deck has no Rocky Helmet or Ventral Punch. So I don't think the Joltik Box player can lose if they play really well.
Well, you're forgetting, right? You can do the Petty Grudge strats, but instead of Petty Grudge, you can do the Gnaw strats.
Yo, true, yeah.
Dunsparce, you know, you have some lines in there.
Again, maybe you're right.
Lines that don't have single back, they go to the Pikachu, keep a single prize board, go to the Gnaw plus Iono. How are they getting out of that?
Honestly, you know what? There's a world where you can have, like, the Joltik Box player overbenches two prizers, and then you just did unsparce them for, like, 60 times. That'd be kind of sick. They put four in play, you can start one-shotting their Maridon in hands with a dead unsparce.
Well, you gotta be careful. They can Iron Hands amp you very much your the unsparce with the Future Booster. Oh, wait, no, you're weak to fighting.
Yeah, you're weak to fighting, bro. You're chill. You're chilling.
We're so bad.
Yeah, just you're chilling.
I don't have this Goldengo Copium, but if I'm playing this Goldengo Dunsparce, I got this one in the
back. Okay, right, fair enough. Maybe it's closer than I thought for a Goldengo. Maybe Joltik Box isn't walking away with this.
It's pretty tough, though.
We got the Gravity Mountain and the EXP share on the left.
Yeah.
EXP share is good. Gravity Mountain, I've seen him playing it. No Power Glass. Power Glass is a pretty big card for the Pikachu to be able to chain those attacks consistently.
Yeah.
Pretty close for sure.
I'll give it a Joltik Box for sure.
All right, fair enough.
I think Joltik Box definitely favored, but I'd win.
Yeah, shout out to everyone for Crispin's Corner. I think that Nathan Stratford was the winner tonight.
Oh, 100%.
For sure. Yeah,
the best deck,
The cast forms just broke it.
That was the most innovative deck I've ever seen, so shout out to Nathan. But LDF, shout out to you for joining us on short notice and filling in on the podcast. You got any shout outs you want to do? Any videos upcoming?
Yeah. So thanks for having me on again. Like I said, if you ever want me to hop on the pod, just hit me up. Had a good time. Talk about Milwaukee. Hopefully next time I'm on the pod, another regionals happens, maybe post NEIC. Maybe all three of us are in day two. We could talk about our day two run.
I'm not going to be there, bro.
Oh, you're not going to be at NEIC? Okay, me and Maddox will run it back.
I got a baby due any day, man.
Oh, true.
LDF and I will make top eight just so we have the extra content, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes, that's true.
I'm going to be streaming it. That's the plan. I'm going to be streaming it, so I need you guys to get on stream for me.
All right, bet. I'm down. Yeah, big shout out to the Shuffle Squad as always. Shout out to my second channel. If you want to hear a lot more of an in-depth tournament report about my run at Milwaukee with Pengo, check out my second channel. Got more Rogue deck coming out on the main channel. I'm pretty excited to get back into content. Been kind of like on and off recently since I got back from Atlanta with like content grind, but I'm back on the grind now. It's just I think taking the time off does help me kind of get motivated again, and then I'm really excited for Destined Rivals. Journey Together Loki was a mid set, so I'm happy that Destined Rivals is like gonna actually be way better for content.
Hey, if you can leak real quick a upcoming video, any Rogue decks from Milwaukee that you're excited to put a video out on?
Honestly, no, I haven't really looked into any of the decks yet.
I might need to try Nathan Stratford's set.
Yo, all right, I'll do a video on Nathan Stratford. I'll title it Most Broken Deck Ever Printed.
Sounds like you're going to make Maridon work, like actual Maridon.
I actually did a video on Maridon Pikachu Hands Crystal with Generator when I was away in Atlanta. So I've tried that already. And I've done a video on Joltik Box. So we'll see. I do have a new Joltik Box deck that I am cooking up. I don't think I'm going to make a video on it because I don't want to leak what it is. I think I'll tell you guys after the recording. Oh. But Joltik Box, I think with a secret tech card, can actually be potentially one of the best decks in the format.
All right.
Be looking out for LDF with that deck sometime soon, maybe winning a regional near you.
Yes, sir.
If I was going to Portland, I would consider playing it, just saying.
And the registration's still open.
Yeah, I'm not going. It's the same weekend as Destined Rivals, so I got to make videos.
I'm going to be on the content.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for joining us, LDF. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Until next week, guys, we'll see you around.
Peace.